mentioned it.
Yeah, see, I can see it.
Great.
I'd like to welcome
great.
Everybody
well,
here for the evening to our program, and I want to tell you a little bit about all the programs in our series before we get started, before I introduce the moderator. Some of you have our yellow sheet, which is about our series of programs that we're giving on traditional culture here in West Virginia and the result of changing times on traditional cultures. We've had woodworkers who shared some of their crafts. Some of you might have seen our exhibit, Buren Lamb's work. He was one of our panelists for one of our ones on our handcrafted program. We've had a program already on herbal medicine. We had a program on the blues. And each week we feature usually two programs featuring some of the people that are here with our Augusta classes. This evening we're going to be having a program on the both the mountain and the hammer and dulcimer. And I'll get into that a little bit more. But we'd like you to invite you to pick these up so you get an idea of what the series is trying to accomplish. I also have some audience surveys, and I'm going to put them back on that chair over there. If you would like to help us out by filling out an audience survey, it'll give us an idea, as well as the funding organization, who was in our audience, what they thought about our program, and just general comments about other things you've done here, how you heard about Augusta. So I'll be putting those over on the chair in just a moment. We have here a collection of people that are all scholars on both mountain and hammer dulcimers. Leo Kretzner, who will be our moderator and one of our speakers on the mountain dulcimer, has been a personal friend of mine for a long time, back before he was even out on plastic. Some of you probably heard his albums.
Vinyl.
Vinyl, whatever. You've got three out now, Leo?
Yeah.
Okay, he's got three albums out on the dulcimer, and those of you who are around for the week might want to stop down at the Augusta store and pick up one of his albums if you'd like what you hear tonight. And we hope that everybody will be here on Thursday. We also have with him Mike Casey, mm-hmm. who has been doing a lot of studying on the dulcimer. He's one of the assistants in the mountain dulcimer class. We have Maddie McNeil, who's the editor and publisher of the Dulcimer Players News publication. And we have Sam Rosetta, probably the foremost hammered dulcimer scholar and maker in the country right now. He's turning out lots and lots of beautiful instruments. Anybody who's seen the dulcimers that are hanging around with maple leaves in the sound hole, you've probably seen some of Sam's designs. They're pretty well represented these past few weeks here at Augusta. And we also have Nick Blanton, who is a local hammer dulcimer maker who works with Sam, but also has designed some of his own dulcimers and is helping Sam out with the advanced hammer dulcimer class. So I'd like to have you help me give a hand in welcoming all of these fantastic dulcimer players.
Oh, yes. Thanks,
Joni. Don't say anything wrong,
that was
Leo.
Right. That was Joni Hahn, who has also taken a significant role in putting all this series together.
And we got together this afternoon over lunch and discussed all the potential things that we could go through, all the potential slides that we could look at. You may or may not have heard the rumor that we were going to also see a movie tonight. When we put it all together, we decided that we could easily look at slides and talk for about 8 hours and decided we'd focus just a little bit more tonight and probably do something on the order of a two-hour presentation. Maybe we'll take a little break in the middle while we're switching over from one set of slides to the next. And hammered and mountain dulcimers are both members of a larger family, which can be generically called zithers. Perhaps you've heard of zithers in terms of the old world concert zithers, all of the third man theme, da 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 da, and so on. But in fact, zither is a little bit more of a generic term for a whole, as you'll see in the course of the evening, very diverse family of instruments that are, you might say, non-necked string instruments in which the strings are stretched over the sounding box for the most part, and you occasionally see some weird variation on that. But that's one of the key criteria for what makes a zither a zither. And probably the two most well-known zithers in this country now are the hammer dulcimer and the mountain dulcimer. And we probably won't get too much dispute amongst ourselves that between the two, the hammer dulcimer is probably the older of the two. It's almost certainly the general type of instrument, certainly not the ones that you see nowadays, but a similar type of instrument that was referred to in the Bible. His voice as the sound of the dulcimer sweet was the reference. Can't tell you which book that was in, but thank you, Book of David. There you go. It's in
Daniel.
That hymn. It's what's that?
Daniel.
Daniel. Thank you. Wax out of my ears here. So much dulcimer music all day, I can barely hear. Thank you. Yeah, you made that up right. Right. Sounds good. Anyways. So, in fact, there are, some of you may know of the Dulcimer Players Club up in Michigan, which is referred to as the original Dulcimer Players Club. And it's not the club that they're talking about which is original, but they're saying it's the original dulcimer. And they make a real point of saying that. And that's the hammered variety. And so to start things off, we'll have Sam Rosetta give us a brief sampling, I understand, of his slide collection.
But we're not going to look at them all, thank goodness. But I'm going to get myself a chair, and if you can't see over my head, say so, and I'll sit on the floor as I do this. Then you may not be able to hear me. That may be better.
Okay. You want to be able to see too, right?
Yeah.
Also, do you have a
cassette? We don't have to be up in
machine for
this is it.
Okay. I'll if I need more time, I'll see. I may get to that. Well, it's part of the confusion between the dulcimers is that it's not so easy to distinguish them between hammer dulcimer and Appalachian dulcimer, because probably historically, at least until the dulcimer revival, starting maybe in the 1940s or so, probably the hammer dulcimer was more known even than the Appalachians. Although people did know that it came from other places. And part of the problem also is that it's not always the hammered dulcimer. In some societies and cultures, it's also plucked, and in some cases only plucked. Even here in America, I once was playing, and a woman walked up to me who was from southern Ohio or western part of West Virginia and said, "Golly, I never saw anyone beat on a dulcimer beat on one of those with those little whatchamacallits you're using." And I said, "Well, are you sure it was the same instrument?" And she says, "Oh, yes, we have those in our church, but we only play them with our fingers. We only pluck them." Is it really exactly like this? "Oh, exactly like that. Well, what do you call it?" And she looked at me askance a little bit and said, "Well, it's a dulcimer, of course." So she knew what it was. But had never seen it struck with the hammers.
How do you separate the dulcimer and psaltery?
Well, historically, at least as far as I know, the psalteries through history were much different. They were simpler, and many of them not really a trapezoid sort of shape. Various curved shapes and triangular shapes. The modern sort of usage of psaltery, meaning a big dulcimer type of instrument that's plucked, actually comes from around the 1890s, when the man by the name of James A. McKenzie of Minneapolis, Minnesota, built some large dulcimers and called them piano harps because they could be sounded with mallets like a piano, or they could be plucked with the finger like a harp. And a player friend of ours, Bob Beers, got a hold of one of those a long time ago, and didn't find the hammers with it. So he tried to pluck it, and had heard that the psaltery was a plucked instrument, so he called it a psaltery, and forevermore there's been a class of hammer dulcimers that we've been calling psalteries. But Mackenzie knew the difference, and he, in his patent, he called it, he said, I'm patenting this under the name, and the name I give it is the piano harp, which is my version of the ancient dulcimer. He had three patents on various strange modifications. But we'll get on to the visuals, and let's see, I'm probably going to have to...
We'll move the screen if we need to, but we'll...
I can move that just a little and prop this up
about the road lights, Johnny.
Huh?
Do we need to bring down the road
lights? Yeah, let me get this.
Let's see where we wind up. Well, not too bad for a first try.
We can lower the screen a little.
Now it starts to get hot on this break.
Well, we'll see how we do.
Just need to raise
it. Needs to go up just a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Well, this is where string instruments really started, probably, with the mouth bow, just a stick of wood with a string. This is actually a fairly current version from the Kalahari Desert of Africa. We'll just go on to some other thing. I've got an unedited number of slides here, which we'll move quickly to the hammer dulcimers, but this is just a capsule view of different kinds of fretted dulcimer types of zithers. The familiar Coke bottle shape being fairly uncommon through history, except in very local areas. This is an interesting fretted dulcimer because it's sort of the missing link between the sort of rectangular Pennsylvania Dutch zither and what we think of as the modern dulcimer with fretted dulcimer with a Coke bottle shape or a canoe sort of shape. This has both. On one side it's a zither, on the other side it's what you might recognize as a dulcimer. I'll let Leo and Mike say more about that evolution later. And even many of the modern makers make shapes other than the Coke bottle shape. There's a modern instrument made on similar to the old Pennsylvania Dutch zither. And these are some slides of some rather space age dulcimers. The California dulcimer approach. We are going to put one of these up in the next shuttle launch. But it's an instrument that's still undergoing a sort of evolution thanks to the revival, and that's kind of interesting and kind of nice. The same is true with the hammer dulcimer. Now, from now on, when I say dulcimer, I mean this old kind of dulcimer, the one we play with hammers or plucking, but it's going to have a lot of strings. This is Chet Parker, who was probably the first person I heard play the dulcimer well, and I was instantly captivated. His instrument was built in about 1903. He built it himself, and it has only 12 treble courses of strings. So it wasn't enormously versatile, but still he could play ragtime and swing and dance music, and such a rhythmic quality to his playing that while he lived, he was always one of my favorite players. Notice the style of hammers, which are just popsicle sticks, practically, with a knob covered with buckskin. Now, here's an instrument that is looks more sophisticated, but it's actually much older. This is probably just prior to the Civil War, and that was a time when the dulcimer had gone from being a parlor instrument to becoming a folk instrument. And here we see a bit of the transition. It's portable size and shape, no big legs or anything, yet we've got these fancy covers over the ends to sort of hide the ugly tuning pins and so on, so that you, I guess, present a good image on stage. Here's one that's even slightly older, but more sophisticated yet, in that it incorporates two playing bridges. The one that's more toward the middle, where are we, there, we today think of that as the treble bridge because it carries higher notes, and the smaller bridge to the right carrying bass notes. Here again, though, we've got the covered pin blocks, but a rectangular form, which is not so portable and weighs a lot more, but it looks a lot more like a piece of furniture in the living room. Here, the walnut pin block covers are opened, and if you look very closely, you can see the faint but still readable letters stenciled in gold on the black painted soundboard.
Are these from mostly collections or just from different museum places?
A lot of these are instruments that have come through my shop for restoration. This particular one was collected in southern Ontario about 18 years ago. But it's typical of pre-Civil War instruments of New England and upstate New York and southern Canada.
Did you restring this one?
Yes. It was also rebridged, which is why the maple wood of the bridges looks so white and raw. Mm-hmm.
And why there are four or five strings.
Right. Notice also, this has fancy dovetail joints in the corners and a cutaway where the strings are for the player to play. It sort of defines the playing area. And this is another thing that marks some of the older instruments. They were built more with an eye for art than for engineering, because that cutaway actually makes them weaker and allows the instrument to warp. The happy owner. And now we're going back even farther in time, but getting more and more elaborate. This is an instrument from the late 1700s, maybe around George Washington's time. And this is from Middle New York State. And this is a beautiful, but rather typical, colonial parlor instrument. Don't forget that pianos were just evolving, and harpsichords were not something that could survive the sea voyage from England. Certainly wouldn't be the sort of thing that could be made in America at that time. The dulcimer was the in vogue parlor instrument in many parts of the colonies. And if you wanted to be one up on the neighbors, you would want a better dulcimer than they had. And this one, as you can see, has fancy turned legs and wild, beautifully grained cabinetry in the wood, which was done by painting the plain looking wood.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit later evolution of the same thing. This was made by a man by the name of, I believe, Hiram Sackett, yes, in 1844. He lived in western New York State and went into business as a dulcimer maker with his brothers. This was fairly common. This is how the small dulcimer factories sprung up after the War for Independence, and there were several family factories in this practically the same town. And this was one that he built for himself, and it was passed down in his family. Obviously, that base didn't come with it. That's just something we set it on for a few photographs. Notice the hammers, the shafts are, the very limber shafts are whalebone corset stays. Didn't have plastic at that time, or I'm sure they would have used it.
That's what Jesse Martin used too, right? Corset stays.
Yes, right. Yeah. So that that material for hammers persevered as the folk tradition of what you use to make hammers out of clear into the early 19th century, 20th century. And notice that someone cut out printed letters and pasted them on strips so that they would know how to play the instrument. Speak up.
What were the tuning pins like, and how were they made?
The tuning pins were hand-forged, as was the tuning wrench, and they were piano size and oblong heads. Now, Hiram Sackett's health began to fail in the midst of his business with his brothers as a dulcimer maker, and his physician chided him for having such an unhealthy indoor occupation and that he ought to change his ways. So he gave up dulcimer making to become a farmer, and he lived to be 88.
There's
a lesson
like
in that for me. Here's an example of a crude but similar idea from Michigan. This is probably post-Civil War, and there are, in England, it was a fashion at one time for the dulcimer to be a court instrument, and they had lids with fancy scenes painted of lords and ladies leaping, dancing, and beautiful drawing rooms with colonnades and so on, lovely oil paintings on the dulcimers. Well, in Michigan, that turns out becomes a old mill with a stream in the woods. And in fact, it was considered a lumberjack's instrument there.
There's no cutout in the bottom end like on those New York ones, the playing gap?
No playing gap. These were more reasonably engineered instruments. This is a really interesting instrument, although it may look simple and terrible. This is one of the best sounding gold instruments I've ever seen. This was made around in the 1880s by a man by the name of John Brown, no relation to Harper's Ferry John Brown, who lived in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and had very sophisticated bracing inside, one of the nicest old instruments I've ever heard. The dulcimer is undergoing an evolution, and unlike most other instruments, for instance, say the violin, which we think of having reached a peak of refinement almost never to be equaled again 200 or 300 years ago, the dulcimer is evolving, and for the most part, our modern instruments, with the greater storehouse of knowledge we can call upon, are superior to most of the older instruments. But there are some real exceptions, and this was one of them.
What is the bottom string there, the offset bridge off to the left?
Well, the current owner decided that he couldn't live without a low E note, and he stuck that on there and kind of desecrated this lovely antique. And it really, that note doesn't sound very good, but the rest of the instrument is wonderful, and it has a pine back and an ash wood soundboard. Quite unusual for a musical instrument. Sounds
great.
Who's
in that, Sam?
It's owned by Bob Spinner.
Oh, Bob Spinner, yeah.
Would you repeat the name of the original maker?
John Brown.
John Brown?
John Brown. This is Viola Cox.
Look at that.
Wonderful lady. I don't know what her age is now, but she still plays with incredible vigor. And if you walk into the room with a dulcimer, she'll insist that you play it, and you'd better get right on it. I remember walking into a jam session, and some young bearded fellow was, you know, asked to play, and he timidly, you know, and softly played some little air, and she said, "Hit that thing so I can hear it. Why don't you play that out? Here, I'll show you how." And she did, by God. Yeah, I love the flag. And here's a whole batch of modern instruments that were made by students here at Augusta about 8 or 9 years ago.
I think that, because of oak tops?
Oak tops.
Yeah, I think that's like 74, 75.
Right, probably.
Yeah, 75, something like that.
At that time, that was more than we'd ever seen in one place at the same time. Now, the dulcimer was not just some sort of a handmade oddity. Come the mid-1880s, they were very marketable, and some of the major musical manufacturers of the country at that time built them. This one was built by Lyon and Healy in the 1880s, and in fact this model was later sold through the turn of the century by Sears and Roebuck Company. And Lyon and Healy, it's a well-made instrument, and this is a factory-made instrument. They were so proud of it that they called it the perfection dulcimer. Uh-huh. Now here's one of the dulcimers by James A. McKenzie. And some of his are beautiful and elaborate. This one was suffering a little, but it shows the general form. They were large rectangular cabinets, this was one of his models that had a cast iron frame. Moving it was like moving a little piano. And they actually sounded better plucked than struck with the hammers. Apparently that was an attractive feature at the time. It sounded good with very soft hammers or plucked, and apparently that was very appealing. We sold a lot of them at that time. With that kind of tone, they were very nice to accompany singing, and I suspect that's almost entirely what they were used for.
Any relation, or did they compare to the Hungarian cymbalum that they played with?
Yes, and in fact, just about the time that this sort of evolution was taking place in America, a similar evolution was taking place in a different direction in Eastern Europe, in Romania and Hungary. In the 1880s, the folk dulcimer, which they call the cymbalum, and was tuned very much like ours, was being evolved, at least by some people, into a big concert instrument with a very different tuning. We'll get to pictures of those. This, tuning-wise, is not related to them. This is tuned just like the English and American and Scottish and Irish hammer dulcimers.
Is the soundboard on that actually arched as it appears?
Yes, the cast iron frame also includes bracing for underneath the bridges. And the soundboards were generally about a quarter inch thick spruce or pine or some other woods, and they were steam bent and then put in there into the arch. They sound terrible hammered, but they sound fairly nice plucked or struck with very soft hammers. Now, oftentimes we joke about the dulcimer. We have to, because the dulcimer doesn't get much notoriety otherwise. And one of the main jokes about the dulcimer is that it's nothing more than a dresser drawer with strings. And wouldn't you know that eventually someone would turn one up and it turns out that the joke is on us. This one was actually discovered in Fairmont, West Virginia. It was probably made about 75 years ago by someone, perhaps a farmer who spent winters building furniture and dulcimers. It's now in residence at the Willow Inn in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, which is on the way to Pittsburgh from here. If you're ever traveling through Waynesburg, by all means, go get a gourmet meal and go see this once-in-a-lifetime vision of a dulcimer with a dresser drawing. Willow Inn. This is the Santur, which is the name for these kinds of instruments in Iran, or the old area that was Persia, and also in India. And physically, there's a strong resemblance in those two parts of the world. The strings are set on little bridgelets, which are movable. And often what a player will do is move the bridges back and forth to tune the instrument to play in a scale, in a certain scale, and then he'll play a piece that'll only be in that scale. They, for them, different scales are signatures.